Hey everybody, welcome to episode number 40, the Kurt Thomas edition of Worldwide Knicks. One man down this week is just me and Alex. Rafa took the day off, you know, right before the regular season opener. No big deal. It's all good. You know, he wouldn't want to talk about Emmanuel quickly anyway, so it's all good. but Rafa will be back next week. Alex, how are you doing tonight?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good, Omar. Yeah, just been out for my wife's birthday, so I've had a glass or two of something, some
Portuguese
Pepsi.
Wine, right?
You know, yeah, Portuguese wine. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's how you know it's gonna be a good episode. Alex got the Portuguese wine.
Not too bad.
Got the
honestly.
Rafa in him already. You know, he's good to go.
I'm on to the Pepsi now to kind of calm me down a little bit.
There you go. Balance. balance. It's okay. It's okay. So thank you, everybody, for joining us. We're just going to jump right in. The Knicks just concluded their preseason last night with a win against Washington, and before that, a loss in Indiana, which was the Benedict Mathurin show. He looked incredible in that game. You know, preseason is kind of weird, Alex. You're kind of... Wins are cool, right? But you're really just kind of looking to see how players are, like, what opportunities are they taking, and, you know, do they look like they're good within the flow of the offense? So I guess just kind of real quick, has there been one player in the preseason as a whole that kind of impressed you?
Yeah, I was just gonna say, like, it honestly, if you're on Twitter, it does feel like you're the only fan base that is actually even talking about preseason. Like, it feels like nobody else cares about it, but the next fan base is just rabid about it, you know, like, yeah. Just jumping all over quickly after like 5 minutes of poor play or whatever. And but yeah, I mean, it's fun. It's just like basketball's back, you know. You've missed it for so long, and you're just dying for any kind of basketball, and that's what it's like to me. I try not to get too high, but then after one game, I was salivating over Jalen Brunson, you know, and just, you know, things like that. So I guess from that perspective, to answer your question, yeah, Brunson's been the one just to really kind of get me excited about the season. But, you know, just from having a point guard just to run the show. But I've been really impressed by RJ as well. Just he looks really calm, and, you know, like, when you give a player the first big contract like that, you're always worried a little bit that, you know, it goes the other way and they just kind of go into their kind of comfort zone. And but you know that the RJ is not wired that way, and thankfully it seems like he's just been his usual self over the summer and really kind of in the gym every day and working on everything. And the one thing that everybody was desperate for him to get better at was his efficiency, and so far so good from that respect. You know, he's looked really solid from there. So
yeah, for me, it's been a combo of RJ and Julius really together. It looks like like last year at moments they seemed like they had some chemistry issues, and I feel like they'd be kind of playing off of each other a little bit more in the preseason. Julius a lot more unselfish, attacking the basket more, not really initiating the offense now, to your point, now that we have a legitimate point guard in Jalen Brunson. So, yeah, that has kind of impressed me. But, you know, I wanted to get that positivity kind of out of the way first, because we're going to talk about a couple of players right now that have been getting torched on Twitter from Knicks fans. You know, to your point, you know, Knicks fans were criticizing Julius for a summer run that he was at in some park and he missed a couple shots. So we are a different breed, to say the least.
Yeah.
But I want to start with Cam Reddish. He is, you know, we were talking with Rafa as well in our group chat about hives and how, like, the fan base attaches themselves to certain players. And really you're starting to feel like the Cam hive is a little bit like the Frank hive, you know, just like, so let this guy get out there. He does defense so well. But, you know, he's had a rough preseason. You know, the shot selection hasn't been great. A lot of the Cam supporters are saying, just give this guy some time. He could be a future all-star. So I guess my question is, does he deserve to get more time as we get into the regular season? Obviously, Thibodeau has mentioned that any minutes that anybody gets are going to be earned.
I don't think he does. You know, I mean, I think he's a, you know, it's not as if he's a first year player. You know, we've got that experience. He's had plenty of experience at Atlanta. It's not as if we've got a small sample size. Yes, he's had a few injuries, but we can look back on his time at Atlanta to know what we've got to a certain extent. You know, we see it, Thibodeau sees it in training, and you know, I think there's enough there to get a kind of valuation. And I know a lot of people say that Tibbs's mind was made up before he even signed, you know, that, you know, he just wasn't a Tibbs player. But I mean, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Do you know, I mean, I know I back Tibbs with a lot of things, but you know, the guy has just got, you know, standards. He's got basic things that he requires from a player. And, you know, one of them's just, you know, you've got to work hard, you know, and you've got to be unselfish. You've got to be put the work in away from the court and all these kind of things. And if he's not seeing that, then, and he's just saying, well, this guy's just not a player for me, but he's put on my roster, and, you know, I'm going to give him a shot. He's given him a shot, and he's not doing anything. Do you know what I mean? What's Tibbs supposed to do? Is he supposed to just say to the rest, the other 10, 11 players that are in front of him, well, hold on, guys, you know, I'm just going to keep giving this guy chances until he works? And, you know, he can't do that, you know, and there are clearly 10 players that are in front of him at the moment, at least. You know, if the guy's not going to take his chance, then that's on him. I'm sorry, but I've never seen the hype about him. You know, yeah, the guy was great in high school. You know, he was, you know, hyped in college. I watched quite a lot of those games in college, more just to see what the Zion hype was all about. You know, Cam never jumped out of the court for me at all. You know, I didn't really notice him a huge amount there. And yeah, he had his ups in Atlanta, but you know, he had plenty of downs as well. And you know, we were hearing the same kind of things from Hawks fans that we're seeing now, which is a real red flag. You know, if you're in your last year of your contract, trying to win a new deal, and you're still, you know, not putting the effort in on the court, then that's a massive red flag for me, and one that I would go nowhere near. You know,
yeah. When I'm again watching him in preseason, the shot selection, like, has just been really bad. Like, his decision-making has not been good. You know, the thing about Cam is, not to make an American football reference here, but if you have, like, an American football, like, a really fast wide receiver, right, the guy's always going to get a chance because he has that one skill that's incredibly valuable. Cam's one skill that's incredibly valuable is his wingspan, you know, because he could get into passing lanes as a wing player with his really long arms, and we've seen that in flashes defensively. But the problem becomes is, are you going to justify putting him in over Evan Fournier? No, because you lose on Evan's shooting. Are you going to justify putting him in over Grimes? No, because Grimes gives you better on-ball defense and better shooting. You know, so once Grimes is back and fully integrated, he looked pretty rough yesterday, super rusty, but, you know, he's a guy who, like, you know, the team loves. Thibodeau loves Grimes, and the front office obviously didn't want to include him in a Donovan Mitchell trade, so they must value him as well. And I believe Cam's option to be, or extension deadline, is in a couple of days, or else he's going to be unrestricted. I highly doubt that the team is going to extend him at all. And it becomes a situation where he's going to be going into unrestricted free agency. Maybe he gets flipped at the deadline. So I guess that brings me to the final point here, which is, what do you think happens with him this year? Do you think he ends up getting traded? Because, like you had mentioned, there's 10 guys in front of him. Thibodeau runs a 9 or 10-man rotation, so he's kind of one of the odd men looking out. So what does the future hold for him in your eyes?
I think that's the perfect spot for him right now is the 11th and 12th spot, because if that doesn't put a rocket up him and make him work to get back into that top 10 in the rotation, then he's out of the league, you know, or at least on a, you know, traded off to a team that's, you know, not a great lot to work with, you know. I mean, it's so frustrating, because there is a spot for him on this roster, and I've mentioned before that the three spot for me is a not a real worry, because obviously you've got RJ there at the minute, but other than RJ, I don't think there's a huge amount of players in this team that can play the three at the minute. We've got two players at the four, and Obi and Randall, who are, and I know you had your thinking that they could drop down to play the three, but I would
5 minutes, Alex. I just wanted for man, 5 minutes.
Please don't. But that means that RJ is playing 43 minutes. Do you know, like,
right.
Do you know, like, and I don't see either of them being able to play the three. The guys that could potentially step up to play the three, I mean, we've seen McBride play there in preseason. We've seen, you know, Grimes, Fournier could maybe step in there, but just due to the size of the Brunson and others that quickly, and you know that we've got a small backcourt there, so I don't see that. Cam has the size and the body to play that perfectly, that backup spot. Do you know what? And especially what we need there is somebody to step in behind RJ and really provide a kind of defensive presence. I think, you know, it's there for him if he wanted it, but he just doesn't seem to want it. And I think the problem with Cam is the fact that he still believes that he should be this kind of star. But if he just accepted the fact that he's currently the 11th, 12th best player in this roster, he needs to fight to get in, but there is a space for him in, you know, as a backup to RJ. There's going to be minutes there for him. Obviously, people are going to miss time. He's going to get minutes here or there. There's his opportunity to get back into the rotation. Then I think he'd do a lot better, but I think he's still got this attitude that he's over and above what he really is, do you know? And he's going to run out of time, and he's not going to get a contract, and he's going to be stuck, and he's going to have to end up accepting a contract from either a low team or somebody outside the NBA. And I really, it's sad to see, because I do agree, he does have talent. He does have the potential, but potential and talent only get you so far. And he's going to end up really struggling to keep a place in the league, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you would think he would probably try to do a Herb Jones type situation where, you know, he kind of becomes this defensive stopper on a young up-and-coming team. And it seems like that young up-and-coming team isn't the Knicks, you know, because, you know, like I said, as long as you have Fournier and RJ and Grimes in the mix there, it's going to be hard, you know. And there is that void at the three, like you mentioned, you know, obviously jokingly talking about, you know, extended minutes of Julius at the three. You know, that's a real problem for this team right now. Like, that's the one downside of kind of getting rid of Alec Burks, right, was that, you know, he could play that position, you know, but so it becomes a big problem. And, you know, granted, RJ does play 37, 38 minutes a night as it is. So it's not like you need a ton of minutes there, but you need some. And, you know, so I'm hoping that he figures it out. I think if he really is struggling still going into the trade deadline, they'll probably flip him for a second round pick, and like a late, super late second round pick. And, you know, and hope for the best. But I want to move on to another player that's been a topic of conversation. I really wish Rafa was here for this convo, because I feel like you and I are pretty positive on this player. Rafa's like a very negative on him, when that is, of course, Emmanuel Quickly. And he's kind of like, he's become this debate topic because of his position, right? Where, you know, the whole, is he a point guard? Is he not a point guard type thing? I guess, first of all, do you think Quickly can play point guard?
I think he can play point guard. I don't see why we're all so obsessed with trying to kind of shoehorn him into that position. I mean, why do we have to? I mean, he's clearly not. I think what it came from is that people were trying to get him into the starting role from last season when Burks obviously took over, and everybody, and you know, he played a lot of point guard in summer league last year, and you know, everybody was like, right, well, Burks shouldn't be playing the point guard, so there's Quickly, he's ready to go, give him a chance, you know. And you could see that point of view to a certain extent, but you're like, well, we've got Brunson now, we've got Rose healthy as backup. you know, we don't need Quickly as point guard, but why does he have to be one? Why can't he just be a third string point guard when he needs to be? Do you know, like, call on him if he's there, if he's ready to go. You know, you've got a ready-made guy that can handle the ball and play some minutes at point guard. Fine. Do you know what? You know, that's all he needs to do. I think, just like with Obi, I think this obsession with trying to get Obi into the starting lineup is pointless. Do you know? I think both of them are more suited to the second unit. Their styles of play are more suited to that kind of spark off the bench, that high energy kind of transition play, which you'll get in the second unit. As soon as you put those in the starting unit and trying to play in a half court game, that's when a lot of the positive, you know, aspects of their game are lost, I think, a little bit. And, you know, it's not a bad thing, you know, to be in the second unit. You know, especially in the NBA, you know, with you know, there's only five guys in the court, you know, and I think it's there's no shame to be a second unit player. You know, Quickly last season especially was closing a lot of lineups, closing a lot of games. Tibbs trusts him, Tibbs likes him. So, you know, he's not on the bench for a reason that Tibbs doesn't like him. You know, he's just more suited to that role, I think. And I don't think there's any shame to it. And from what it looks like, he Quickly doesn't seem to be that bothered about being, again, cast as a second unit player. I just don't really see the huge problem with it. I don't know. I think it's maybe just a case of, you know, Knicks fans just creating something that's just not really there, like a big story that's not really there. But I mean, you're not talking about a guy that was drafted in the top 10 or anything like that. You know, he's a what 25th pick. Yeah, I mean, he's a good player, but, you know, he's not, he's, I don't think he's, I mean, you know, you'd obviously love him to be, but I don't think he's going to end up being some sort of star or anything, superstar or anything. He's found a really nice role. You know, he's very effective at doing it. So why don't we just let him play and as he is and just see where it takes him?
Here's what kills me about the Quickly is he a point guard debate. You have everybody talking about, oh, we're in a positionless league now, you know, where, like, the other night, the Orlando Magic whipped out a lineup that just screams positionless league. Like, they had, like, three power forward / centers in the starting lineup, for example, right? Mm. So, and, like, look at Cleveland. Like, they got Garland and Donovan Mitchell. So, obviously, Garland's not going to be setting up the offense every single time because you've got Donovan Mitchell. Does that make Darius Garland any less of a point guard because Donovan Mitchell's setting up the offense? No. I mean, I think we all know that. We know that Darius Garland is a point guard. But it's just so funny how we talk about positionless ball and all this, but that classification is missing when it comes to Quickly. Everybody's like, oh, well, is he a point guard? Is he not a point guard? And if he's not a true point, which I think we've all agreed there's like two or three of them in the league left, and then who cares? You know, if he's effective, he's effective. I think this conversation would be a lot easier, honestly, if Fournier wasn't on the team, because at that point, Grimes would be a starting two guard. He would be your backup two who can occasionally spell Rose at the point. And that becomes a very defined combo guard role for him. But as it stands, you know, you still do have Evan on the team. And so it becomes a situation where he's going to got to be mixed and matched in there. And that's okay. My question about him, though, becomes, obviously him and Obi are both kind of coming up on extensions here in the next year or two. Do you think they're going to try and extend? I guess we could talk about both. Are they going to try and extend both of these guys? I mean, what do you see that outcome looking like?
Yeah, I think they will extend both. Yeah. This is the other thing that I have, you know, an issue with over the last year, especially the whole play the kids. You know, we've got to play them. We've got to see what we've got. No, we don't. You know, these guys are on rookie deals for a reason. You know, they've got 3-4 years where we can evaluate them. We can look at them. We can play them 10 minutes a game if we want. Build up those minutes. Do you know, it doesn't have to have... You don't have to be playing 30, 35 minutes in your rookie year. Do you know, like, There's no rush, and it's really frustrating. And at the end of those rookie deals, you have team control. You can extend them if you want. Do you know, you have the, you have that control. And it's just this I don't know if it's just that, you know, the fans have been just so starved of success for so long. They're so desperate to see players coming through and extended and, you know, developed. And I get that. I really do. But you just really need to just take a step back and just let these guys develop in their own time. You know, especially in the guards, you know, guards take time to develop. They're not going to be superstars apart from, you know, the very small minority. And
everybody's not Anthony Edwards.
So. Well, yeah, Anthony Edwards, Ja Morant, you know, these guys are obviously coming in the league and just blowing you away, but, you know, they are a small minority, you know. And yeah, again, like, as I've already mentioned, quickly being the 25th pick or whatever he was, do you know, like, just let the guy play, do you know? And yeah, if he's playing 15 minutes a night, do you know, like, just let it happen. We've got years of this guy, and we can extend him if we want and have more years with him. Do you know, it's really not a big deal.
Well, here's the crazy thing, Alex. Like, look who just got extended this summer after RJ, Tyler Hero and Jordan Poole.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those guys are coming off the bench more by and large. Mm-hmm. You know, like, mm-hmm. Klay Thompson's still the starter in Golden State.
Yep.
You know, and so Jordan Poole's getting a bunch of money coming off the bench. So people acting like, oh, why are you pigeonholing IQ into this bench role? Like, if he gets 25 plus minutes a night, who cares? You know, exactly. And that's the thing. And that's what makes the debate so stupid to me. And, like, I understand, like, just bring up Rafa's kind of disdain for quickly. Like, what we were just saying about Cam, about decision-making, he has that same criticism. And mm-hmm. the other night he went 4-for-18. So it's not without merit, you know. But I like quickly. You know, I feel like I agree with Alex. He will be re-signed here. Same thing with Obi. I feel like, of course, Obi, it kind of depends. He might be in a situation where he wants a more expanded role, especially if Randall is part of the long-term plans here. But, you know, I think he continues to develop, continues to become a better playmaker, and that'll only increase as the time goes on, you know, in the season and in his career. But with that, kind of want to shift the talking points here to a little bit of a conversation that we kind of started privately, Alex, about coaching. And specifically, you know, Tibbs is a big topic of conversation with a lot of fans. Say a lot of people don't think he's too rigid, or he doesn't like the rotations, or whatever the case may be. So I guess, first of all, what is your outlook for him this season? Like, what are you looking to see from Thibodeau this season that you would think, outside of the win-loss record, that would make it a successful campaign for him?
Wow, tough. It's a tough question. I know I'm the Tibbs campaigner in on this pod, and I think it's just where we were a couple of years ago. I mean, we were still a bit of a mess, and there's lots of different ways we could have gone. And at the time, I was thinking, well, you know, we've lost out in Kyrie and KD. You know, we're a bit of a mess after Fizdale, and we could have really done with just a steady hand, you know, an experienced coach. You know, that's not had much failure. Yeah, he's had ups and downs, but like any coach does, but, you know, there's been no outright kind of failures there. He's somebody that knows New York. You know, he can handle the kind of, you know, the pressure of being under the spotlight here. I talked myself into it at the time. I was like, right, yeah, okay, I'm behind this. I can see the thinking here. It's a bit of a departure from where we've been before. We seem to, the last few, she's just gone for, you know, kind of up and coming coaches, you know, some kind of young minds that, and it just didn't work. So I can totally see why they went down the road of him. And to be honest, just as a person, just as a coach, I think he's great. You know, I really love his personality. I love the way he kind of, he seems to get all the players to buy in. You know, yes, you get guys like Taj and D Rose that are just, you know, swear by the guy, you know, and you know, there's a reason they do. You know, he seems to just be able to kind of keep keep the, you know, the roster on side, despite being a Marion coach. He doesn't lose the kind of the dressing room. He seems to have them all on side still, even after a very poor season. You know, there didn't seem to be any kind of negativity coming from the players, you know, and that's a real talent. And coming from myself as a teacher, you know, just keeping the class on side, you know, making sure that everybody's buying into what you're doing. And as much as everybody says, you know, about consistency, treating players the same, you know, it's just a complete falsehood. It's again, as a teacher, you can't teach everybody the same. You have to give the impression that you are, but you have to treat people differently. And, you know, different people take different things to make them tick. You know, some players like, you know, or kind of thrive by being, you know, a coach being on them the whole time and treating them really strictly. And some players just need, you know, a kind of arm around the shoulder just to say, you know, and treat them with gloves a little bit and just try and get to them that way. But it's really hard, you know, and everybody that says that, you know, Tibbs is a terrible coach is wrong, you know, and whatever you think, he's not a terrible coach. He's proven over a long, long, long time he's a very, very, very good coach. He might not be the best coach. He might not be a great coach even, but he's a very, very good coach. And that can't be denied. There's too big a sample size to say that. There are too many players that swear by him. Yeah, this is the part that I'm not sure about, because before this, maybe a couple of months ago, I thought maybe Tibbs would see out the season and then hand over the reins to somebody like Johnny Bryant. And that's where I'm a bit stuck now, because we're at a point now where we're starting to get players in like Jalen Brunson, who is not a guy that is here to wait on the next draft pick and just fight around the kind of the, you know, the bottom positions and the lottery. You know, he's here to win. The whole roster is constructed to win now. And if we were to get rid of Tibbs now, what kind of coach do you bring in? Do you bring in a Johnny Bryant who's completely unproven, other than the fact that he's been in the organization for a good while now, so he knows the system and things? Is he just going to come in and basically run the team the same way? Is he going to bring in his own ideas? Which is he going to be able to handle the New York media? Is he going to be able to handle the New York fans? Do you know, it's just, that's a huge risk for me. Is there a more experienced coach out there that isn't Tibbs? Who is that person? I don't know. Who is certainly available. There's not that many out there. We've gone through a list of people. So it's difficult now. I really don't know which way they're going to go down. Yeah, maybe 2 years ago was the right time to go for a really unproven guy and build from there. But we've gone down this road now, and I think we've gone too far to suddenly jump back and just give the reins to somebody completely unproven. But it's worked in other places like Boston. I know Adoko is, you know, for other reasons, completely gone off the rails. But, you know, before that, you know, he took them to the finals, do you know, and it worked. So they took the risk with a roster that was a winning roster, you know, with some top players. Mm-hmm. So maybe it can be done, but I'm just scared to go back there. Do you know, I've been burnt too many times, and Tibbs just gave me that kind of comfort that, you know, he knew what he was doing. He could handle the pressure, and that gave me a little bit of comfort, a little bit of confidence that, you know, we were going the right way. So I think it just does come from a place that, you know, I've been burnt before.
Here's my issue when it comes to the Tibbs debate, because I feel like on this pod, you're kind of the Tibbs defender. Rafa's really the Tibbs critic. I feel like I'm kind of the moderate in this discussion, right? And, you know, I'm not advocating for him to get fired, but I also know he has his shortcomings. The thing is, there's this, like, black and white opinion view of Tibbs, where everybody's like, oh, he's too rigid, and he does this. Everybody makes their minutes distribution jokes about him, right? But when you really think about him here, he has incorporated some things that a lot of people wouldn't have. Like, a lot of people are saying, oh, he's He's a minutes guy, but at the same time, nobody plays over 40 minutes really, unless it's an overtime game. Then they'll say things about like, well, he doesn't really know offense, and it's not really part of the modern game. Last year, the Knicks were shooting a lot more threes. This year, they're going to be shooting more threes, and if preseason's any indication, they're going to be playing with more pace, which is another big criticism. In this preseason, we've seen them run three guard rotations at points. Like you had a lineup at multiple points in the preseason that featured Rose, McBride, and Quickley. Old Tibbs probably isn't doing that if he's really that rigid. And to me, the issue becomes us as fans, we need to realize what do we want? Because you got this play the kids movement, which insinuates that you want to be like Oklahoma City, develop from within. And so when you do that, you get a young coach, like Jamal Mosley, Ime Udoka, guys like that, who maybe relate with the young players a little bit better. And you're going to do a lot of losing, but you're eventually going to get lucky in the draft. The Knicks are not in the mix for the Wembanyama sweepstakes, unlike probably a third of the league that is. So they are, to your point, in a if not win now, win soon mode, right? You don't sign Jalen Brunson because you're thinking you're going to be a top five pick in the draft. You sign Jalen Brunson because you think you're going to be a top five seed in the East. So that's my issue with it, where it's like, all right, pick a lane. Do you want to win games? If you don't want to win games, then you get a young coach, you trade anybody that's older than 26, and then you win 20, 30 games like Detroit and Orlando. But when you have Tibbs, you're going to win games. That's just how it is. But the thing is, the fan base wants to win too. So it's like, all right, do you want a youth move or do you want to win? And I feel like Tibbs has the unenviable task of balancing that. He's gonna have a mix of veterans and young players, and a lot of people jump on him like, oh, he gives Julius too much leeway, or he favors Derrick Rose over Deuce McBride. Like, yeah, I'd favor Derrick Rose over Deuce McBride too. Have you watched them play? I mean, like
Yeah,
it's
exactly. Ridiculous.
it's an interesting type of thing. Like, and I wonder often, like, is this like this in like Dallas? Is it like this in these other markets that like Houston, when they were good with Harden, were they doing that? Were they crying about, oh man, Eric Gordon's getting too many minutes over this young shooting guard we just drafted? Were we doing that? Like, it becomes a thing where he is put in such a tough spot, and where you got people saying he should be fired for not starting Cam Reddish, the 11th man on the roster. Like,
Exactly.
that's insanity to me.
It's the micro analyzing, and we've already talked about it with Quickley from the coaching perspective. And this was last year, to be fair, when the Knicks were playing the Suns, and everybody was saying, oh, Tibbs should never have got the coach of the year over Monty Williams and things like that. And the Knicks were playing the Suns, and for a good part of the game, I thought, right, well, hold on a second. I don't know much about Monty Williams. I tend to just watch the Knicks. So apart from, and if I'm watching another team, I'll be watching the players. I'm not really watching the coach. But for most of the game, I just sat and watched Monty Williams and what decisions he was making. And he was making some stinkers. Like, he was making some moves like, what are you doing? Like, the matchups were terrible. The rotations were terrible. He was calling timeouts at really weird points. But people just didn't notice it. Maybe it was because it was the Suns. Maybe it was because, they just like Monty Williams as a person. I don't know. But it's always just that kind of, no coach is perfect. And, that micro analyzing, and it's so hard at that top level to be a coach. And I say Tibbs is just one of these guys that I think can manage that kind of pressure, and just kind of bat off the people that are screaming at him just for tiny little things, or what about that inbounds play that the game was a disaster because of that one inbounds play that went wrong. You're like, right, well, one inbounds play went wrong. It might not have been Tibbs' fault. It might have been the fact that the other coach drew up a brilliant defensive play or something like that. It's just like, it's not that simple. And it's and sports in general just comes down to that. You know, quite a lot of the times fans will just make a really snap judgment and a really, really oversimplified judgment as to what's gone right or what's gone wrong. And it's just, I think it's just the spotlight in New York. And this is my whole worry at the moment is that, you know, if Tibbs can't handle it and Tibbs can't be the guy for New York, then who is going to manage that? Who is going to handle that?
The only guy I could think of, and I think you'd have a hard time prying him from LA, is Ty Lue, right?
Yeah.
Because he's dealt with coaching LeBron, which is its own circus, you know, and obviously now he has Kawhi and PG, so, you know, pretty strong personality players. So I feel like that's the type of guy that you would replace him. But the thing about it is, like, this scrutiny, and I don't even think it's a media thing, honestly. Like, yeah, I mean, you know, you have your Bermans and Bond, well, no longer Berman, but, like, your Steph Bondys and Frank Isolas of the world who are going to, you know, come out with, I don't want to call them hit pieces, but, you know, they'll be extra critical. But, you know, for the most part, I feel like the media is the media. It's just this fan base where that's the double-edged sword of having a smart fan base, you know? Like, New York Knicks fans, especially, they understand basketball for the most part. You know, they grow up playing the game and everything, I think more so than in other regions around the country. And the curse of that is you think you know better than the coach. You see that, like, again, make another American football reference. You see that in Dallas a lot in the NFL. Because in Texas, football is basically religion. And so everybody who's watching the Cowboys played in high school, maybe coaches in high school, you know, that kind of thing. So they think they know better. So they're always under scrutiny. And it's the same type of concept with the Knicks. Everybody's like, oh, he ran this out of bounds play. It's never like something like super broad or whatever. Like, oh, he's losing games. It's more so, oh, man, he inserted this guy at this moment. It was the wrong thing to do. If it was me, I would have put in this guy in this moment. And I was like, okay, guys, you know, if you're so good, why don't you start coaching? You know, and that's the thing.
Yeah. But you've said to us many times as well that, you know, it is different in American sports. It's the coach that always gets it, and it's a players' league, and it's the same around the world in a lot of different sports, and that, you know, the sword always kind of falls on the coach at the end of the day, and I get that as well,
especially in the NBA. Yeah,
and you know, it's just the nature of the job. But you know, Tibbs seems to have the backing of you know, Rose especially, and if he's the kind of head of the snake in the front office, then I think he's here for at least the season. So maybe they choose to go in a different direction at the end of the season. I don't know, but maybe they move Tibbs upstairs to a kind of another role. I don't know,
like advisory role type thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, it's like a lot of these things. If I come across people on Twitter that just fire Tibbs, he doesn't play OB 40 minutes or whatever, you're like, well, what seriously would you do in that situation? Mm-hmm. If you're going to fire him, who do you replace him with? You've if you're making a statement like that, you've got to actually explain it, you know, and, you know, who are you going to replace him with? Okay, Johnny Bryant, right, well, that means that's a huge risk, you know, and yeah, if it's one you're going to make, fair enough, but, you know, if it goes wrong, then are we going to come back to you and say, well, we had a potential Hall of Fame coach, maybe, that, you know, that was at least steadying the ship. You know, it's a slow process to get to the top, but we've got a very young roster that can be built slowly and you know, pick the right moment. We might make a move to get a star. Let's see how it goes then with an experienced, well-respected coach. But
and the last point I'll say about this, the team hasn't turned on him. Like, they're still bought in. You know, that's the important thing. A lot of times, sometimes you have a old school style coach in the Thibodeau or like, you know, these guys who were like, who cut their teeth like a decade or two ago. And they're just like, they just goes in one ear out the other. I still think these guys are listening to him. You know,
well, I mean, how many players from from his career have really gone backwards. Do you know what I mean? I think all these players just see, like, that this coach is making me better, and it might not be to the position that I want to be in, but he's at least improving and developing me and making me better. So, you know, they buy in.
Yeah. So I kind of wanted to close this episode out talking a little bit about this documentary that just came out, I think, a week or two ago on HBO, called Through the Eight in the Garden, which is kind of reliving the Linsanity blip in time. You know, I wouldn't even call it an era. It was just a couple of weeks, you know. Really good watch, honestly. And ironically, it's really short. It only runs 38 minutes. But it had a
just,
lot of...
Just like Linsanity.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, you had, you know, a lot of commentary about, you know, stereotypes of Asian American athletes and how they're always deemed as unathletic, and how, looking back on it 10 years ago, especially in the climate now here in the U.S. where Asian Americans are kind of discriminated against post-COVID, you know, where there's like hate crimes and there's rampant racism about it and things of that nature, to kind of be able to look back 10 years ago and say, you know, this was our guy, this was our hero, you know, this is like the hope for the Asian American athlete, was interesting. It got me thinking a little bit about Linsanity. Obviously, so that summer, or that year when he was just going crazy, it was just a fun couple of weeks to be a Knick fan, you know, and it was everywhere. You know, it was, we haven't been in like the national spotlight, I feel like, for a positive reason, since the late 90s when Patrick was here. And, you know, the fact that it was this undrafted guard from Harvard of all places, you know, who was just, he was just like, had this bravado waving people off in Toronto, to taking jump shots in Kobe's grill, you know, and it just reminded me of that team, you know, and that, because that was, you know, the Amari and Melo era, you know, and he kind of just swooped in there for like 2 weeks and stole the spotlight. So just kind of wanted to, you know, remember that a little bit. I guess, what's your biggest memory from Linsanity, Alex?
See, I got back into the NBA in 2011. I went over to run the marathon in New York, and funnily enough, that was the lockout year, so I didn't actually see any basketball when I went over. But, you know, when I went back over, I just thought, when I was going over, I was thinking, I need to get back into basketball again, and I decided to get right back into the league, and then they had the lockout. So when I went over, I couldn't see any games, but I kept my fandom going again, and I got properly obsessed after that. And I think Linsanity the following year just kicked at the right time for me, and that it was just beginning to get that properly, and say, properly obsessed with the, starting to, you know, listen to podcasts, starting to kind of really you know, get league pass, watching every game and getting really into everything. So it came along at a perfect point for me, just, and those couple of weeks just felt like, you know, a couple of years. Do you know, it really, I don't know if it was just the intensity of it all, it always surprises me when people talk about it was just 2 weeks. Do you know, it really didn't feel like that at all. And yeah, it was nice to follow his career. I know he talks about, you know that he actually ended up having a decent career in the league, you know, and he talks about, you know, his high school and his college career, you know, he's putting up great numbers there, but just maybe not from a respected basketball college and basketball schools and things. So you know, it just wasn't noticed as much. But, you know, it's a fascinating story, and I think it just gave the whole city a boost. Yeah, it's just great to relive it again, and you know, I loved that team so much, and I loved Lynn. I've got my Lynn jersey from that time, and yeah, I love to look back on it. And just, I mean, if you ever watching a game or highlights, is it just the Lakers game you watch, really? So that's the obvious one to go to, but
yeah, the Toronto one probably as well, I would say, because of the game winner. Yeah, for me, Alex, it's, you know, as somebody who comes from a culture that a lot of NBA players aren't made that way. Like the only like Arab NBA player of note that comes to my mind is Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf from the 90s. And obviously that's a whole other bag of worms there because of the national anthem stuff. But yeah, there have been a couple of Iranian players as well over the years, but not a lot of representation. So, you know, seeing somebody like that on my team from an underrepresented community in the NBA was awesome, you know, and it was a great moment. You know, it was nice to relive it by watching the doc. You know, if you haven't watched the doc, definitely do that. It's well worth your time. It's only 38 minutes, like I said, and you get a little bit of a deeper understanding of his experience through that, where he was like sleeping on Jared Jeffrey's couch, you know, while this was happening, which is insane. You know, like it's insane to think that this guy is going into the Mecca, dropping 38 on Kobe, and then, you know, he's leaving the game and crashing at Jared Jeffrey's house, you know, on this really bad couch. It's just really funny to think about. But that is going to wrap us up here. The preseason's over, so we'll be back next week to talk about some games that actually count, you know, when the Knicks are opening against Memphis. So super excited to see the RJ and Brunson versus Ja and Desmond Bain show. So that should be pretty exciting. As always, thank you for listening to the podcast. If you like what we do here at Worldwide Knicks, please make sure to subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can follow us on Twitter. We are at WW Knicks Podcast, and as we are getting into the regular season, you'll see a lot more activity from us on there. We live tweet during the games, comment on the goings-on in Knicks land, and all that good stuff. Rafa will be back next week on behalf of Alex, Omar, Worldwide Knicks, signing out. We will see you guys next week.